reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 20, Text 4.
Number 5.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Avidya kama karmami.
Avidya kama karmami.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Pradibudho nusadyate.
Pradibudho nusadyate.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Avidya kama karmami. Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Pradibhudho nusadyate.
Pradibhudho nusadyate.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Atakayam imam vidvam.
Avidya kama karmami.
Avidya kama karmami.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Arabdha iti naivasmin.
Pradibhudho nusadyate.
Pradibhudho nusadyate.
Atha.
Atha.
Therefore. Kayam.
Kayam.
Body.
Body.
Imam.
Imam.
This.
Vidvan.
Vidvan.
He who has knowledge.
He who has knowledge.
Avidya.
Avidya.
By nescience.
Kama.
Kama.
Desires.
Karmami.
Karmami.
And by activities.
And by activities.
Arabdha.
Created.
Iti.
Thus.
Na.
Never.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Asmin.
To this body.
Pradibhudha.
One who knows.
One knows.
Anusadyate.
Becomes addicted.
Translation. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, desires, and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. Translation, please repeat. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life.
Of the bodily conception of life.
Who know that this body
Is composed of nescience.
Desires and activities. Resulting from illusion. Do not become addicted.
To the body.
Therefore, as stated in a previous verse, those with good intellect, sudhiya, do not accept themselves to be the body. Being a creation of nescience, the body has two types of activities. In the bodily conception, when we think that sense gratification will help us, we are an illusion. Another kind of illusion is to think that one will become happy by trying to satisfy the desires that arise from the illusory body by attaining elevation to the higher planets, planetary systems, or by performing various types of Vedic rituals. This is all illusion. Similarly, material activities performed for political emancipation and social and humanitarian activities performed with an idea that people of the world be happy are also illusory, because the basic principle is the bodily conception, which is illusory. Whatever we desire or perform under the bodily conception is all illusion. In other words, Lord Vishnu informed Prithvi Maharaj that although the sacrificial performances set an example for ordinary people, there was no need for such a sacrificial performances as far as his personal self was concerned. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2.45, Tragunya Vishaya Veda Nishtragunya Bhavadana Nirvando Nitya Sattvasto Niyoga Chemahatmanan. The Vedas mainly deal with the subject of the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, O Arjuna. Be transcendental to all of them. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. The ritualistic performances recommended in the Vedas mainly depend on the three modes of material nature. Consequently, Arjuna was advised to transcend the Vedic activities. The activities Arjuna was advised to perform were the transcendental activities of devotional service. The Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Priti Maharaj, a very interesting section of Srimad Bhagavatam and the fourth Maharaj. Because Priti Maharaj, he is Shakti Vishavatam, incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yet he was, in the role of the king, and he had to perform his duties. Now we know, going back through the story, that he wanted to perform 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, and then Indra came and disturbed and stole the horse that was meant for the 100th Ashwamedha yagya. So from time to time we read that Indra, as mentioned yesterday by Aniruddha, he engages in these types of activities to protect his own position in the heaven. He is known and famous for performing the 100 Ashwamedha yagyas. I was just recently in one temple, and I was there with Ganga Sagara anniversary, or the descent of the Ganga, and flowing, going from the Himalaya to the Bay of Bengal. And there's one Sagara island there, where there's a temple of Kapila Muni. The story was that King Sagara, he also wanted to perform the 100 Ashwamedha yagyas, but Indra again stole the horse before he could complete it. And he sent his, King Sagara sent his 60,000 sons, he had 60,000, and he sent them to find where the horse was, and he wanted them to complete their yagya. And so they came, and they went everywhere, and they came to the spot, and they found the horse just standing near Kapila Muni, who was in meditation. He was in some cave or something like that. So they thought that here's the culprit, here's the thief, he's the one that's stolen the horse, and they were getting angry, and they were threatening him, and they were going towards him, and then he opened his eyes and became angry with them for falsely accusing him, and with his vision he burnt the sons of Sagara to ashes. So later on he felt the compassion, and he agreed that cutting a long story short here, but anyway, he agreed to the restoration of the sons if their ashes could be mixed with the Ganga Jal. So later on, King Bhagirath, he wanted to save his ancestors, the sons of King Sagara, and at that time Ganga was only flowing in the heaven, and he wanted to induce the Ganga to come to the earth, and he performed a lot of tapasya and so on, and somehow or other he was able to bring the Ganga to earth, and she came to the Himalaya first, going on the head of Lord Vishnu into the hair to catch the force of the Ganga, and then from him he came to the earth, to the Himalaya, and then flowing to the Bay of Bengal. So he was able to induce the Ganga to come, and the ashes were mixed. And of course it was Indra, not Lord Kapila, who actually had stolen the horse at that time. So, interesting. Of course, you know, these things happen from time to time with Indra. Indra lives a long life. It's not that he is doing these activities every day of the week. So we have to be careful if we say too many negative things against Indra. But nevertheless, he was affected by protecting his position. And even though he is the king of heaven, he is subject to these types of frailties, resentment and envy of others. Even the great King Indra is subject to what to speak of you and I. But here we're reading that Lord Vishnu himself comes with Indra. So we can understand that Lord Vishnu is appearing directly So, and he's bringing Indra. So Indra is not an ordinary person. For Lord Vishnu to directly appear and to bring someone with him, that would be, we would be so fortunate if we were in that position. You know, that we did something wrong, and then Lord Vishnu came and personally came with us to arrange to get some forgiveness for that. So we can understand that that Indra is somewhat of an exalted personality that Lord Vishnu chose to bring him. And of course he appeared to a Prithu in the arena of Prithu Maharaj's yagya. He took the opportunity. So the previous verses are quite significant. And he was speaking directly to King Prithu. He said that Indra has disturbed you and stopped you from performing the 100 sacrifices. Now he has come with me to be forgiven by you. Therefore excuse him. So in the next verse he goes on, he says, one who is advanced in intelligence and eager to perform welfare activities, Father, considered best amongst human beings, and as such such an advanced human is never malicious to others. So he was speaking to Prithu, but Indra was also there. This is an interesting situation that Lord Vishnu took the opportunity. Now, Prithu Maharaj is a very advanced personality. Whether or not he needed to hear, he most probably didn't need to hear that. Because he is actually advanced. But still, Lord Vishnu took the opportunity to present some proper understanding of how to do things and what our mentality should be in these sorts of situations. Actually, he at the end of the one of the previous purport, Srila Prabhupada says that one who is both devoted and highly advanced in intelligence does not take action against the soul or the body. If there's any discrepancy, he forgives. It is said that forgiveness is a quality of those who are advancing in spiritual knowledge. So this forgiving, and you have it there in the Christian religion also, there's a big emphasis on the forgiving, and Lord Jesus Christ forgave the sins of the sinners and so on. So forgiving is actually a quality. And why? Because one who's actually advanced that doesn't identify with the body. So here Lord Vishnu is presenting the philosophy very nicely of how what our consciousness should be. One who's actually advanced. Now, when one holds resentment against another or has some maliciousness, well, what is it based on? Generally it's based on a bodily situation. You know, this one has disturbed me, disturbed my body, or disturbed my activities, or disturbed my position, and all these are, as explained here, symptoms of the bodily identification. The Prabhupada said one thing is that we identify ourselves as the body, and another that's an illusion, and another kind of illusion is that we think that by the activities of that body, which we've misidentified with, by the activities of that body, by performing certain things in this world, we're going to be happy by the outcome of that. And whatever that is, and even up to the point of desiring to go to the heavens, performing ritualistic activities, performing yagyas, that is another type of illusion. And Prabhupada elaborates on it and alluded to by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Srila Prabhupada very much elaborates on it, in fact quoting Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtaguna Babadana Nirvango Nityasatmasur Nirgachema Atmaman. This Veda and these rituals in the Veda mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. Rise above these modes, and Krishna speaking to Arjuna, of course. Rise above the modes of nature. The Veda is meant there to instruct the persons, the souls who have come to the world, they're conditioned by the world. Alright, you're in the world, how to live in the world, and you know, and you have your attachments, but how to gradually rise above your attachments. Now, this is very gradual, and there can be discrepancies in the performance of these rituals and so on and so forth. Factually speaking, in Kali Yuga, they're not recommended, because one has to perform them just rightly, and if there's a discrepancy, then there may be a very adverse reaction to that. Instead of pleasing the deva or the devas that you are worshipping, maybe if there's some discrepancy, you will very much displease them. When you're trying to flatter someone, maybe you say the wrong thing, and then instead of flattering them, you insult them. So that can happen. So one has to be very careful. Or if you over-flatter someone, you know, then you know, so many things can go wrong. So therefore, in the Kali Yuga, everyone is subject to so many defects, and that the possibility of things going wrong is very high. Very, very high. And so, to avoid the pitfalls of wrongdoings, better just to stick to very simple, straightforward methods, especially as far as living in the world and how to actually make spiritual advancement. Krishna is advising Arjuna. First of all, Krishna says a suchananda suchastram to Arjuna. He says that Arjuna, when he didn't want to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, this was a situation arranged by Krishna so he could speak nicely Bhagavad Gita, because Arjuna was a very advanced personality. But nevertheless, he put him into some sort of illusion. And then he said that your reasons for not wanting to do your duty and fighting, you're speaking very learned words, but you're mourning for something that is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So, and then Krishna goes on to speak to Arjuna. Prabhupada says indirectly, you know, Krishna called Arjuna a fool, even though he appeared to be offering very intelligent arguments why he shouldn't do his duty and fight in the battle of Kurukshetra right at the last minute. When you think about it, all the armies were assembled, Arjuna was ready, then right at the last minute, when he saw, you know, Bhishma and others, then he didn't want to do it all of a sudden. So Krishna arranged that so he could speak. So Krishna does, he's a very amazing personality. How he's, of course, the supreme personality of God. So he can do so many things, arrange so many situations. That's night I was in a lecture last night, I was giving him one home program. I was mentioning about Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya and how Duryodhana thought that he was very confident that he would win the war with the Pandavas because he had more soldiers. He had the 11 Akshahinis and the Pandavas only had 7. And not only that, but there was Bhishma Dev, there was Dronacharya, and they were invincible warriors. And how on earth could the Pandavas even think that they would be victorious against the overwhelming force of his army, and plus these great personalities who were invincible? So Prabhupada actually mentioned his purport there, that Duryodhana's calculation was well ascertained. If you look at it from the material point of view, he's got so many more soldiers and big, huge a personality like Bhishma, who were invincible. So as well as, but he made one critical mistake. And what was that mistake? Who can say? What was his mistake in his calculation?
He did not
know. Krishna was on the other side. The calculation is good. But one mistake he made, that the Supreme Personality of God is on the other side. So who's going to win? So I was also mentioning, and in one purport, Prabhupada explained the position of Bhishma, of course. There's a great history to how Bhishma descended to the world, and Dronacharya, and I was telling last night, but there's a long story I won't go into today. But Bhishma and Drona stayed on the side and fighting on behalf of Duryodhana. Now, one explanation is that they were obligated to whoever was the king, the emperor. Of course, Dhritarashtra was the emperor, but more or less Duryodhana was running the whole kingdom. They were loyal to that, even though they didn't agree with him in so many ways, and they protested their treatment of the Pandavas, and actually how Yudhisthira should actually be. Still, somehow or other, the arrangement was like that, so they were loyal to that. They felt obligated to that. That was one reason. The other reason that Prabhupada explains, that Krishna influenced them also. From here he says that he is the Paramatma, the soul within the heart, and he influenced them to be of that mind, because he had some purpose to fulfill. And and the main thing was, as far as Bhishma, he wanted to show that he wanted to glorify Bhishma, that one thing, because he had Yudhisthira Maharaj come and get instructions from him at the end of the battle of Kuru. That was one thing. And the other thing was that he wanted to show also that even if you've got great invincible personalities like Bhishma and Drona, if they're on the wrong side, they'll lose. They're on the wrong side, they're going to lose. No matter how invincible they are. You know, Dronacharya could not be killed by anyone unless he put his weapons there. Bhishma was the same. He could choose his time of the death. He got the blessings from his father, Shantanu, for sacrificing the throne. He blessed him. You can choose your own time of the death. No one will force you. So they were both invincible warriors. So who could they were, you know, even Bhim Sen. Now Duryodhana thought that if anyone was going to kill him, it was Bhim Sen. But you know, Bhim Sen was compared to a fee in the presence of Bhishma. Even though he was like grandfather Bhima, but still he was invincible. So, nevertheless, Krishna wanted to show that even these invincible warriors, if they're on the wrong side, they're going to be killed. So, Krishna accomplishes many things. So, here also, in this situation, we see how Krishna is arranging things in such a way that such good lessons are given. He personally brought Indra to ask for the forgiveness. So from one side of things, that if someone does something wrong, you know, one has to be prepared to beg forgiveness for that. That's one thing. It's not that, of course, there are some people who are so ignorant, they are doing wrong all the time, and they're not thinking they're doing wrong. They're thinking they're doing right. And some people are like that. They're never wrong. Some people are never wrong about anything. Whatever they do, they're always right. And if something goes wrong, it's never them, it's the other person's fault. His fault, her fault. If it went wrong, it's not my fault. I did everything right. So some people are like that. They're so much in ignorance. They never do anything wrong. And some people just, even if they did something wrong, they never think to ask forgiveness for that, for their wrongdoing. But nevertheless, it should be that you do something wrong, then you should, and here Krishna shows personally how, you know, he wanted Indra to apologize to Prithvi. And not only that, he directly brought him, just in case Indra thought that he wouldn't directly do it. He directly brought him there, and not only that, he began to speak, instructing Prithu, but also the instruction was for Indra, that here, you're supposed to be an advanced personality. You're the king of the heaven, yet, you know, and you're advanced, you've had the training, you've had the, you're advanced in the knowledge. Well, what good is that knowledge if you hold some resentment to others who threaten your position? What's the good of that knowledge? So on one side, Indra's being instructed. On the other side, Prithu, whether or not he needs instruction is one thing, but nevertheless, Prithu's being instructed that you are an advanced personality. You are thinking to do good for the welfare of people. This is explained here. Someone who is actually intelligent and actually have some sort of devotion will always think to do good for people. And so Prithu was thinking in his duty as the king to do these yagyas, which are pleasing to the Supreme Personality and pleasing to the Vedas. And so, because of that, people in general will be benefited. Not just him. He's not thinking just about himself. He's thinking about the kingdom and the people in, by performing these yajnas, they will be very prosperous. The devas will be happy, the Supreme, and the whole kingdom, everyone will flourish. So therefore, he's thinking for the good of the other. So Lord Vishnu is pointing out that if you're such a person and you're thinking of doing good for others, but then something goes wrong, and then all of a sudden you turn from a person who's thinking of doing good for others, you turn all of a sudden into someone who wants to punish others. So just in case, Prithu was obviously not this sort of person, but just in case someone's like that, that you're doing good things, but something goes wrong, and then you turn in the extreme way, and then you resort to inflicting punishment and pain. Which he may have wanted to do, as far as, oh, this is the one who stole the horse? This is the one? No matter if he's Indra, I'm the king, I'm going to punish him now. Right? He deserves to be punished. He could have thought like that, isn't it? He could have thought that I'm going to punish this Indra. Thank you, Vishnu, for bringing Indra. Just put him there, and now I'm going to punish him. You know, whatever the punishment, might have been. So he could have thought like that, but here Lord Vishnu is saying, no, don't be like that. One of the main qualities of an actually advanced person is forgiveness. And if you're actually advanced, what is the good if you don't manifest these qualities? What is the good of all? It's just like it's wasted. It's wasted. You've had all this education, all this training, and then you're going to react like a person who has had no training. Understand? So, of course, great Mahabhagavat devotees, they intrinsically just react in this way, that they'll be forgiving, they'll react in just the appropriate way. But advanced personas, they may not be on the Mahabhagavat platforms, but still, even though there may be a feeling to want to take some action against the person, still they should understand that this is not the thing to do, actually. It's not the thing to do. First of all, Indra shouldn't have taken the horse. So that was wrong for him. And why should he be thinking like that? Why is he identifying with the body? This verse today about identifying with the body, or, you know, directly, I am a man, I am a woman, I am intelligent, I am beautiful, I am this, that, the other thing. This is, and the prophet says, this is, he uses this word illusion so many times in this purport we read, in this particular point. This is illusion, this is illusion, this is illusion. He repeats it so many times. It's illusion. The whole thing is illusion. So just to think you're the body, that's illusion. To think that activities that you do with the body, they're also illusion. But nevertheless, there are people, especially Kali Yuga, mostly everyone, who are in this illusion. But someone who's actually advanced, when people who are in illusion do things that are very unsavory, what should be the reaction of someone who's very advanced? This is the lesson to be learned by those who are advanced and those who are aspiring to be advanced. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned here. First of all, how to react in these situations. One must practice a lot of patience and tolerance, even though the urge to retaliate. So Lord Vishnu is instructing, and he's directly asking him, please excuse him. In this first verse, Lord Vishnu directly says that I brought Indra, now he has come with me to be forgiven by you, therefore excuse him. So, I mean, what is Prithu Maharaj going to say? No. I remember years ago here in Melbourne, actually, that a couple of brahmacharis are having some big argument, and it got a little out of control. And so I came and I was the president here. So I had to speak to, I spoke to one of them, he came to me. And I said that, and he explained everything from his side, so I was listening, and then I said, well, best thing in these situations, whatever whoever's at fault, the best that the Vaishnavas, they, you know, whatever the misunderstanding, and you know, they beg forgiveness if they've caused any harm or pain or hurt or anything like that. So I'll go and speak to the other brahmachari, and if you're ready to go, and apologize. And so the first one said yes, and I thought, all right. And then I went to the second one, and I said, the first one, he's ready to apologize and ask for forgiveness, and that second one said, no. What he did was so bad, I can't forgive him. So I had to explain to him that, all right, I know you're hurt, but still, if you're an aspiring Vaishnava, and the aspiring Vaishnavas always try to manifest the best qualities, and to not accept someone's apology, this is not showing the best qualities. But anyway, after a long discussion, I was able to convince him, and they both apologized to each other. But I just was remembering that as I was saying. But someone shouldn't be like that. If someone is willing to come forward, and apologize, then one should be ready to accept that apology. Of course, there are those who commit so many bad things and don't apologize and aren't prepared to, and they perhaps even keep committing. So that's another situation that has to be understood on an individual case by case, how to react to that. Generally, one practices forbearance and tolerance, but sometimes persons who are advanced can speak to those personalities who are like that and try to bring a more congenial situation about. But anyway, in this case, Lord Indra has come. He's agreed to come with Vishnu, and Vishnu is directly asking that you please excuse him. Another point is that, as I've already mentioned, that if we don't practice the best qualities, even though we may not immediately feel like it, and we're not on the topmost levels yet, at least we should understand that we should be doing that. Because by surrendering to the lower nature and allowing the lower qualities to manifest, that won't at all be helpful to advancement in Krishna consciousness. Ultimately, the individual will be the loser. The individual will be the loser. One can choose to remain angry or to retaliate, but that won't be very helpful, in maintaining anger against someone, and that can go on for a long time. I remember one devotee came to me and admitted that, I've been feeling anger against this other devotee for something he did. You know, even when I'm chanting my rounds, I'm chanting angry rounds. Even my japa is angry because I'm just thinking of this thing. So I said, that's not good. Angry japa is not good. But nevertheless, sometimes we may find ourselves in this situation that even our japa is angry japa. I want you to be mindful. Therefore, it's proper, of course, encourages us to attend the classes and hear these types of things and hear these lessons. So indulging in the lower nature and allowing the lower quality to manifest, we don't lose our devotional service, but it doesn't behoove someone who's had that education and that advancement. One should act appropriately according to their position. Even in the outside world, if someone's got a big position, they're expected to behave appropriate to their position. You know, if you're the Prime Minister of Australia, you're not expected to act in a very gross... You're the Prime Minister, you have to act in an appropriate way as befitting your position. You can't, you know, because such and such on the street corner, he did it or she did it, doesn't mean you can do it. You are the Prime Minister. You understand? So also, we are devotees. And so, someone may be doing it, or even another devotee may be doing it, which is not good. But as far as ourselves, we should always try to keep this in mind, that we should behave very appropriately according to what is acceptable sadhu behaviour. And if from time to time we cross the line of the sadhu, Prabhupada actually in one place I remember reading this, or in actions, don't cross the line of the sadhu. Because there's a line, there's sadhu type activities, so when you're acting, always remain on the side of the sadhu activities. Don't go on the other side. But from time to time, because we're not totally free from being affected by the modes of material nature, we cross that line. So when we do cross that line, then here's the lesson of what to do. You know, if you committed some offence, then the action is, the prescription is rather, that you go and beg forgiveness from the person you offend. And generally, of course, you know, at the end of the life is also prescribed that one, you know, when all the family members come and others come, that one ask forgiveness for any offences that they may have performed, knowingly or unknowingly. That's generally the prescription for what someone who's about to depart the world, just in case. And we saw that Prabhupada, he did that, you know, in Vrindavan in his last days. Many of the God brothers came and he asked forgiveness, although they of course answered that you have not committed any offence. But still, Prabhupada, I may have committed some in my preaching activities, I may have been too forthright and so on and so forth. Please forgive me. So he did that. So in general, it's always best to be humble and always be prepared to be forgiving and rectifying a situation. Rectifying a situation. I remember one time here, just a little incident here, when Prabhupada came, he was ready to give the class. Satyarupa Maharaj was his servant at that time. And Prabhupada said, where are my glasses? It was just a small thing. Satyarupa Maharaj, oh, Prabhupada, I forgot them. Prabhupada was living in the Grihastha place nearby. And so then Prabhupada kept looking at him. So then what are you going to do? he wasn't satisfied with just, I forgot them, Prabhupada. What are you going to do? Oh, I'll send someone immediately, Prabhupada, to get them. That's what Prabhupada wanted to say. Get them. Rectify the situation. Rectify. So, okay, you've done something wrong. What are you going to do to fix it? What are you going to do to rectify it? And in rectifying it, we should be very humble also. You know, when we ask, you know, when we come to someone and ask, beg for their forgiveness, apologize, it's up to them whether they accept or not. Of course they should, but they may not. You know, so don't get into a fight about that. I am offering, I apologize to you. Someone may say, I don't accept it. And then you may say, why don't you accept it? I've seen that also. I'm offering, why aren't you accepting? Well, I don't want to. Why don't you want to? Then a whole other fight. You see? So it's a question of having, you know, if you're remaining humble and understanding this basic philosophy, you're not the body, you're identifying with the body, everything, and therefore that's why Lord Vishnu is going on in this way, that what is the root cause of all these things? More or less that is the explanation, why the explanation is given here. What is the root cause of, you know, committing offences, you know, doing all these things, why did Indra? The root cause of this is the bodily identification. That's the root cause. You know, you can go to the anger management courses and this and all these other courses, but it won't, you know, it won't solve the real problem. The real problem is this identification with the body. There's always going to be something going wrong, because the body is just is temporary and fragile. So there's always something. So you can't have a situation where everything's going to be perfect in this material world. There's always going to be something. So, you know, doing this course, may be temporarily helpful, may have some good ideas, but ultimately it's not really going to solve the problem. Solve the problem is that you get to the root cause of it. This is bodily identification. And then once you understand that, now how to realize it. So one thing to have the knowledge of it, another thing to have the realization that I am the soul, I am not the body. So that's the other thing. Because someone who reacts in a very negative way to very provoking situations, even though they know they've had some education as far as spiritual knowledge, that means that their realization is not perfected yet. The knowledge is there, but the realization is not. And a symptom of it is that how you just reacted. Understand? How you just reacted is a symptom of how you're not on the perfection. Just like I heard Prabhupada, one devotee went to Prabhupada, when I'm chanting my rounds, I'm thinking of other things. And Prabhupada says, that is because your chanting is not pure yet. Your chanting is not pure yet. So, just someone to say that is an indication that the chanting is not pure. See? For someone to react the way they did is an indication that their realization is not. But nevertheless, we're aspiring to advance, and we shouldn't be too disheartened. What's the use? I can't do it. I react like this all the time. Let me jump off the Westgate Bridge or something like that. No. No, you have to persevere. Perseverance is another good quality. You have to persevere, and you have to be humble enough to persevere. Generally, if you just want to take extreme action, that's another sign of pride, actually. Another sign, I can't do it, that's it. No. Be humble enough to admit it, and be humble enough to persevere on it. You see? So all these other things are symptoms of someone who's not on the perfected platform as yet. So that's practically all of us, maybe save a few who are very exalted ones amongst us. But there's good lessons to be learned here. And now we have to try to become realized as far as all these points made here by the Supreme Personality of God. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Does anyone have any question they'd like to ask or comment? I'll read this again. Those who are in full knowledge of the bodily conception of life, who know that this body is composed of nescience, desires and activities resulting from illusion, do not become addicted to the body. There's one other point that I didn't touch on, this use of the word addicted, because there's one thing, you become addicted, to... you get this attachment to the body and the concept of the whole thing, then you become addicted to it. Someone was telling me last night that there are those who come along to the programs and like everything and do the chanting, everything, but they can't give up their meat. One person specifically was very addicted to the meeting. Just addicted. And I said, well, it's not that we have a shortage of nice prasadam as an alternative to the meat. So it's just a mental addiction. If there was nothing else, I can understand. Okay, you're going to eat the meat. Nothing else available. But as far as, devotees and offering food to Krishna, so much variety. But why there needs to be the addiction? That means it's just something that's built up just in the mind, more or less, just in the mind. It's nothing on a practical level that can really justify it. But on the mental level, someone has become addicted. So this addicted is going on very much on that level. And this is mentioned here. Those who actually advance, they do not become addicted to this body, which is more or less the situation of pretty much everyone in the Kali Yuga. They're more or less addicted to these things. Addicted. And they find it very difficult to give them up. Therefore, and no amount of other activities, even the ritualistic yajnas, but the Krishna consciousness as human by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very so powerful, was presented and given to us by our acharyas and by Srila Prabhupada. It's so powerful that even the addicted ones can give up those addictions and then take up the Krishna. But they have to take it up fully. Otherwise, every now and again you have an addiction relapse. But the stronger you absorb yourself in the higher position, the higher taste, then the less that addiction will come to the front. All right, then yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, I'm just wondering, you talked about forgiveness, but sometimes some people, you know, they still hold against you. You did this, but you still apologize and forgive, ask forgiveness, but they still pinpoint you, they hold against you in workplace, or I've seen some of my past, you know, friends, and how do you get up?
But as I said, you know, you may apologize and even they may verbally accept it, but as you just mentioned, sometimes within themselves they're still maintaining some resentment towards you or whatever. And so there, you have to tolerate that. You have to tolerate that. And it's not good for them. Maybe some others, maybe you can talk with them about that, you know, or maybe others can talk with them about that. But as far as you're concerned, don't you become upset because they're still maintaining something. That is their decision. But you've done the right thing. Understand? You've done the right thing. You've gone. You've apologized. You've done the right thing. Whatever their situation, that is up to them. That should be the mentality. And hopefully, they'll be able to, from within their heart, because some things take time, you know, especially something that goes in the heart, even though they're, you know, and it's still there in the heart. We're not all the Mahabhagavats yet. So it's still there. So maybe after 6 months, 1 year, that'll be gone. So we shouldn't be impatient. We should just, that is their position now, and just. But we've done the right thing and we've apologized. Yeah.
Thank you. Maharaj, because we are an illusion, we are attached to the body, or because we are attached to the body, we are an illusion. How does it work?
Because we're an illusion, we're attached to the body. Or because of attachment to the body, we get an illusion.
Yeah.
Now, it comes from our forgetfulness of Krishna, so and our own position. So from that illusion, we get the body, and then we become attached to the body, which creates a moral illusion. The original there is our own individual illusion in the beginning that we can enjoy separately and be in a separate situation from Krishna. So originally there was the illusion, that illusion. But that illusion is quite small in the beginning, but then it becomes more big as we get entangled in this world. And then the body and everything, the illusion becomes very much magnified. Yes, Paul.
We're all the same products of our upbringing and family. And sometimes all the young people, they have attitudes that they will not take responsibility for. And they will pass that responsibility on to others. It's like, I'm like this because you did this, you did that. So try to understand then where does personal responsibility start and finish? Everyone is responsible for their own actions. We make choices that we make. If you're making the wrong choices, is that fully your responsibility? Or how much of those others are being responsible? Like, are they also culpable?
Well, it's difficult in one sense that, you know, that will be determined on a case-by-case basis, you know. But as far as our mentality, you know, we should avoid blaming others for situations. They may have been at fault. And our mood should be more, all right, something's gone wrong, let's try to rectify it. But if we get caught up in just blaming and then criticizing, then that's not good. We should accept, you know, responsibility as much as possible on ourselves. I remember one time Prabhupada was asked by one of the temple presidents, what does it mean to be a temple president, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada just replied very simply. He said that, temple president, he said, if anything goes wrong, it's your fault. So in other words, according to the situation, we accept more and more responsibilities. Someone may have been at fault, not us, but nevertheless, we try to, you know. So in other words, don't get into, you know, as I said at the beginning, some people just are never wrong. They always blame everybody else, and it's always everybody else's fault, and that's an excuse for them to criticize everyone. So we should avoid that at all costs. Should avoid that at all costs. But nevertheless, there may be someone who did something wrong. So therefore, let's try to rectify, and don't allow ourselves to indulge in the mentality of criticizing continuously and fault finding and so on and so forth. So the degree and the situation, that will have to be seen according to actually the situation. But our mentality should always be, we should accept as much responsibility as possible. Something does go wrong, and especially if it's in the sphere of our jurisdiction, then we have to try to do something about it, even though we may not have been personally responsible. The other person made a mistake. So that's always the mood of the Vaishnavas, the mood of the Guru. Prabhupada told us that, you know, if you, as my disciples, you have to behave appropriately, otherwise if you do something wrong, it will reflect on me. It will reflect on me, because you are my disciples, and then they'll blame the Guru. Why the Guru is not doing something? So he said to us from time to time, just, you are my disciples, so act appropriately. Yes, last question. Speak loudly, you're on the back.
If somebody is humble, I think the forgiveness is sort of automatically, because it does not even take offenses.
Mm.
But if somebody forgives it, he is not necessarily humble yet.
If someone
forgives,
yeah,
he's not humble yet. Correct way to say it?
The first part would, yeah, if someone actually is humble, what was the first part? If someone is humble, you said?
The forgiveness is automatic.
Yeah, forgiveness will be automatic. Yeah.
Offenses.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Because someone's humble, then he'll accept apology because he's humble. But what the second part was, the forgiveness?
If somebody forgives,
he's not humble.
It may be.
I understand what you're alluding to, but who am I to forgive anyone? That type of matter. I'm a nothing. Why should I take offence in the first place? But still, if someone actually comes, then even if you're like that, who am I to forgive? I'm a nobody. I didn't take offence anyway. Still, he's offering apology as a gesture. You accept. That is the etiquette. That is the etiquette, the Vaishnava etiquette. Someone comes, and then you accept it, and you be gracious. Thank you very much. I accept your apology. So maybe you didn't think that any offence was committed. So then you might think that, why should I give the forgiveness, because there was no offence. But still, the graciousness has to be there. You can say like that, oh, I didn't take any offence. But nevertheless, if you want to apologise. Alright, thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Gaura Premanandi.